sending messages, having messages up that promote counterterrorism is effective. Because at least those who use social media, who are on Facebook, who are on Twitter, use YouTube, if they're provided with an opportunity to see these messages, they might obtain a better understanding as to what terrorism is, why it is wrong. And if they see a counter-terrorist message before they see a message that promotes terrorism, then I would hope that individuals would understand that a certain tweet that goes out there that promotes terrorism is clearly not only a violation of the terms and conditions that are clearly laid out on Twitter, but it promotes hatred. And I think today's youth is highly educated, and more people are understanding the impacts of terrorist actions, terrorist activities, and terrorist groups. I think it's one thing for the youth to become more educated about these issues, but it's another thing for people to actually discuss the issue. And I noticed that with your articles, the ones that you've posted so far, you not only focus on the legal aspect of things, but you focus on cybersecurity, which is a highly relevant field. It's an area that is growing, and as time progresses, more advancements continue to be made. And I think that more people need to talk about cybersecurity, and more people need to address these areas of concern.
You have cyber attacks, you have firms that are using the internet and are using cyber capabilities to attack either infrastructure or websites or communications capability. Those are attacks. Those are targeted at individuals in a way to intervene in their ability to function properly. So the Sony attack, cyber attack. The attack on Ukraine recently, cyber attack on infrastructure. Those are attacks. But what I mean by cyber culture is by how much of our culture is now online. So many people are on Facebook, so many people are on Twitter, so many people use LinkedIn, they put their entire resume on LinkedIn. Half our lives are on the internet. And not only are we putting content out, we're receiving information daily, right? So it's not just a cyber attack is a cyber attack, but cyber culture includes so many different things, and not all of them are good. When you have extremist messages online, people can see it. This becomes part of your environment. Whether or not it's sitting right next to you in person, it is on your computer screen. It is on the environment you choose to associate on the internet. For us to talk about cybersecurity is great, and I think we need to take a lot of steps in terms of policy to coordinate a response mechanism for that. But in terms of a cultural approach, a societal approach, there might not be one direct policy initiative to regard that, because so much of our lives are on the internet. There are so many things we have to watch out for on there. It's not the safe, happy place that, you know, it's not all cat videos. I wish it were all cat videos.
Cyber culture, as you mentioned, everyone's on the internet. A lot of people have their resumes online. They use LinkedIn. A lot of people use Facebook. Some people even post their address on Facebook or their date of birth. And this is a discussion that I had with Inspector Shauna Coxon. We talked about not only cybersecurity, but also cyber culture. And for those of you who are listening today, I would encourage you to listen to the podcast in order to obtain more information about what to avoid when using social media. Oftentimes, there are individuals who will go online and they will post too much information. And that can lead to not only your privacy being violated, but it's a matter of safety as well. I think whenever anyone uses Facebook, you should question whether you should accept friend requests from people you don't know. You wouldn't want someone going through your profile who's not a friend. Even there have been cases where when someone adds you, you can see if they're a friend of a friend. I encourage everyone, when using Facebook, only add those who you know. And if it means that you have 200 friends instead of 1,000, I think it's better to have 200 real friends than 1,000 fake friends on your profile. Another thing that I oftentimes encourage people to do when using LinkedIn, you can post. The purpose of LinkedIn is it's like the Facebook of professionals. And the beauty behind LinkedIn is it's a great way to network with people. But overexposing yourself putting too much information, too much detail is not necessarily always the best thing. Now, on LinkedIn, I don't believe you can post your address or your personal information, but there's always the option of including your contact information one way or another. So if you're comfortable, if you're a user of LinkedIn or a user of social media and you're comfortable with having your personal information out there, that's your choice. It's your right to include your personal information. No one can tell you or restrict you from doing so. But just be aware of the risks that are possible the second you disclose that information. I have Facebook. Do I have my address on there? No, I don't. Do I have my date of birth? I don't think so. At least I'd hope not. Do I have friends on my Facebook account that I fully know who they are or I've known for a while? Of course I do. Do I have anyone who I don't know? No. Do I get friend requests from people who would like to be friends, but I have never met? And what do? I decline. And I've heard this from a lot of people, that they get random friend requests from people that they don't know. And like I said, unless you know the person, don't accept. And if you do accept, it's your right to do so, but just be aware of the risks. Amy, as a student, what is the best advice that you can provide to those who are interested in studying international affairs and relations?
One of the perks of studying international relations is it overlaps very well with so many other topics, so many other career paths. International relations, it's not just the knowledge of history, political science, and economics. It teaches you how to think about that. It teaches you how to think about how these different sectors work together. It makes you take considerations beyond inter-industry connections. So it's not just how do you operate within an industry, but how does the industry have to work with the government, per se? Or if you're a company in one state working with another, how do diplomatic affairs, how may that impact your work? For anybody who's interested in doing it, I highly encourage it. If you're not sure if you want to go a diplomatic route, or if you aren't really sure you want to become an academic international relations theorist, if you're interested in it and you really want to understand the connections that are being made between states and between governments and NGOs and other firms, I would highly encourage it. It's a very multidisciplinary area, and you can take the skills you learn from studying international relations and apply them to a lot of different areas. So, to be honest, when I was coming out of high school, I, like a lot of students going into university, I wasn't 100% sure. The thing is, since I've started international relations, I've never looked back. Because it's one of those degrees that I know the skills are going to translate. I'm learning not only the history and the political science and economics, but I'm learning how they all connect. And making those sort of connections is going to make a difference in how you approach a career.
I think it's also important for students not only to study international relations and affairs, if it's of interest to them, but to be actively involved in various networking events, roundtables, conferences, anything that would not only provide an individual with more information about the area of interest to them, but anything that provides you with an opportunity to network with individuals is not only highly beneficial, but it allows you an opportunity to perhaps look at possible internships, possible jobs, any positions that might be available to you during the summer months or once you complete that degree in international relations. It's always good to have people that you not only network with, but it's good to have a list of people that you can contact if you're looking for a position. On top of that, I'd like to add that it's oftentimes good to become affiliated with various organizations and associations that are out there. Here at the NATO Association of Canada, we provide memberships to students. So for those who are interested in becoming members, you would have accessibility to a lot of these roundtables, events, conferences, and networking opportunities that we have coming up throughout the year. So I highly encourage today's youth and today's students to look at not only being engaged in various organizations and associations that are of interest to you, but get out there. Don't be afraid to speak to people and don't be afraid to ask individuals for advice, because without asking, you'll never know, you'll never get the answers. As an international and highly motivated undergraduate student here at the University of Toronto, you're currently studying in Trinity College. Throughout your academic studies, you have maintained high academic standards throughout all of your, most of your educational history. In addition, you were also very active in all aspects of university life. Oftentimes, there are a lot of students who are interested in becoming more involved in various organizations and associations in university, but it can be difficult when you have courses, and if you're working part-time, it can be difficult to balance everything at once. So what is the best advice that you'd be able to provide to those who are very busy studying but are interested in becoming more involved in various student associations and groups that are out there? What would you say to someone like that?
So what I would say, and believe me, I understand being busy with studying. I mean, in terms of that, I think it's important to let yourself do things that you find to be important. So let's say you're studying something and you find a club that may not have anything to do with your actual degree, but you find to be that you really want to pursue. A lot of the organizations and associations I've been part of while at the University of Toronto are actually filmmaking organizations. I made a lot of short documentaries. I really enjoyed it. And that was something that I decided, look, this is something that I'm not going to have necessarily the course time doing in terms of filmmaking, right? But so I use my time to get involved in that. And you know what? There's no point. Don't be afraid if your extracurriculars don't necessarily fit into the whole story of your degree, because you don't know what those skills can apply to. You don't know that. So having participated in these sort of filmmaking groups, I understand a little bit more how media works. I understand how media production works, how you have to approach it, how you have to think about it when you're creating. If you want to make a short documentary, how do you need to approach that? And you know what? That's a skill that I can use in maybe other locations. I mean, it's really, you should not be afraid that if it doesn't directly apply to what you're studying, that you shouldn't do it.